This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 1-888-408-6141. That's 1-888-408-6141 or tryzona.com.
Welcome to Layla Weighs In. Here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, thank you for joining me this week. Every week, I weigh in on health topics in the news, anything related to nutrition, wellness, health, disease, and your questions. I really appreciate the questions that you're emailing me, as well as any comments or health topics that you'd like me to discuss or explore, provided they're related to health, wellness, and nutrition, and medical conditions. It's all the same bag, so to speak. Email me at radioprogram@AOL.com. Email to radioprogram@AOL.com. Now, I want to talk to you today. You've heard me talk about the proton pump inhibitors before. You know, your Prilosec, Nexium, Prevacid, Zegerid, those medications that are being prescribed more and more that we see. Well, they're finding that the many side effects are indeed problematic. And now they're finding a link to increased stroke, of all things. And now what's interesting is, you know, a common risk factor for stroke that maybe your cardiologist may or may not know about, or if they do know about it, may or may not agree with it, but it's something we check here often at the Hoffman Center. It's a high homocysteine level. A high homocysteine is an independent risk factor for stroke, cardiovascular disease, dementia, as well as bone fracture, osteoporosis. Now, this late study, this is a Danish study, found an increased link to stroke not necessarily having to do with a high homocysteine. So they state that PPIs used widely to reduce stomach acid and treat heartburn have been linked to an increased risk for ischemic stroke in a new study. The Danish Nationwide Observational Study, presented at the recent American Heart Association 2016 Scientific Sessions, showed a dose-related increased risk for ischemic stroke with all four proton pump inhibitors, PPIs, investigated, which are Prilosec, Nexium, Prevacid, and Zegerid, but no increased risk with histamine 2, H2 blockers, which are used for similar indications. Let me tell you the difference. The H2, the histamine 2 blockers are Zantac, Tagamet, Pepcid, and Axid. These are different from the PPIs, which are Prilosec, Nexium, Zegerid, Prevacid, right? So they're linking the PPIs to an increased risk of ischemic stroke, but not the H2 blockers, Zantac, Tagamet, Pepcid, Axid. So for those of you taking H2 blockers like Zantac, less worry. So the researchers at the Danish Heart Foundation in Copenhagen, Denmark, note that their findings add to a growing body of evidence linking PPIs with cardiovascular disease. By the way, this is out of Medscape, very interesting article. They report that preclinical studies have shown PPIs reduce the production of nitric oxide, leading to endothelial dysfunction. And several observational clinical studies have linked their use to cardiovascular disease. But to our knowledge, this is a quote, this is the first study to look at the effect of PPI drugs on ischemic stroke. Interesting. So preclinical studies have shown PPIs reduce the production of nitric oxide, which leads to endothelial dysfunction. Nitric oxide, you know, the stuff, nitric oxide produced in the body, and nitric oxide producing foods like celery and beets and greens and vegetables. This helps the endothelium, the smooth muscle within arteries, to relax, so that you will have reduced blood pressure and more increased blood flow, right? But reducing the production of nitric oxide can lead to endothelial dysfunction and therefore increase risk of high blood pressure, stroke, cardiovascular disease, all of that. So these results, however, the researchers say, should be regarded as preliminary, as they're coming from an observational study, right? An observational study, remember, does not prove cause and effect. It is merely an observation where associations can be made, correlations can be made, new hypotheses can be formed for further research. And certainly, this does merit further research. But they say, they think that we can say the study adds to the evidence questioning the cardiovascular safety of PPIs. Agreed. And they further assert that we would recommend that people should not take these drugs unless there is a clear indication for them. Many people are taking them unnecessarily, or they're continuing to take them long-term when they don't need to. And you know, I see this often in my practice, that when patients are prescribed a PPI, they're told to take Prilosec, Nexium, they're told to take it for the long term. And they're saying, well, you need to take it for life because your stomach is creating too much acid. Now, the worst case scenarios are those who are told that they have to take it for life because there is evidence of Barrett's esophagus. That's erosion in the esophagus caused by overproduction of acid, not necessarily overproduction, but reflux of that acid, which is then causing ulcer or erosion in the esophagus. And this may be a risk factor for esophageal cancer. It only raises that risk factor, I need to add, only slightly for esophageal cancer. So researchers are saying, I urge doctors to review their patients on PPIs and look at why they're taking these drugs and consider whether they really need them or if they could at least take them at a lower dose. Hey, that makes sense. I'm a nutritionist. I'm a big fan of no medicine, but a lower dose is still a reason to do the jig of joy during my day. So the researchers point out that PPIs are available over the counter in many countries, same here in America, and many patients take them off label, which is a concern. So, in this presentation, the Danish researchers noted that prescription PPIs has increased rapidly during the past decades. And the prevalence of PPI use is high in the general population, although many patients are taking these drugs with no obvious indication. I'll give you an example of that. I have at least a handful of patients who come to me, and when I go through their, not just their supplement review, but their medication review, to see if there are any interactions and things, and when I ask them why they're taking omeprazole, aka Prilosec, Nexium, those, right, the PPIs, when they have no reflux or not complaining of reflux, they say, oh, I know, and I never had reflux, but my doctor told me I have silent reflux, so I should take it. And you know, there's a lot of controversy about the reflux, why it exists, that it may have more to do with inflammation than low stomach acid, than a high stomach acid. It's found actually that the opposite is true, that those with low stomach acid have more tendency to reflux than not. So by increasing their stomach acid, by taking enzymes with HCl, betaine, by increasing the stomach acid a little bit, that these reflux reactions go away. Because, you know, we get reflux and indigestion when we don't digest properly. And under what condition don't we digest well? Low stomach acid. So, let me tell you how these Danish researchers did this study. They used a nationwide Danish registries, the nationwide Danish registries, to identify all individuals older than 30 years who had elective gastroscopy between the years 1997 and 2012. Patients with prior cardiovascular disease at baseline were excluded. This database was linked to the Danish Registry for Medicinal Products to identify patients taking various medications, including PPIs and the H2 blockers. So, a total of 244,679 individuals were included in the study. The mean age was 57 years. Approximately 44% had filled a prescription for a PPI, pardon me. During follow-up, there were 9,489 cases, 9,489 events of first-time stroke. This is 3.9% of the 44%. Results showed that the crude stroke incidence rates per 10,000 person years were 88.9 for PPI use versus 55.7 for no PPI use. Interesting. This is significant. And after adjustment for age, sex, hypertension, diabetes, heart failure, use of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, current use of a PPI was associated with a 20% increased risk for stroke, an incidence rate ratio of 1.19, which is a 95% confidence interval for you statistics buffs out there. So, and interestingly, the H2 receptor antagonists like your Zantac, Tagamet, Pepcid, and Axid showed no association with stroke risk. Okay? So interesting, although this study is observational, say the researchers, so no causal effect can be proven, we think the dose response we've seen strengthens our findings. We didn't see any increased risk at low doses, but the risk started to rise at the medium doses, but most patients taking these drugs were taking medium doses or higher. And the lack of any effect on stroke risk with the H2 blockers versus the PPIs also strengthens the findings with regard to PPIs. Very, very, very interesting. So, another reason to be careful of that Prilosec or the Nexium you've been prescribed, there may be increased stroke risk, and this may be independent of high homocysteine levels. We know that those PPIs, when we don't have enough stomach acid, we don't digest and absorb well. That means we don't digest and absorb our micronutrients like calcium, magnesium. That includes the B vitamins needed to lower homocysteine, such as B6, B12, folate. Keep that in mind. Moving on, there is a wonderful article at Weston A. Price.org called The Scarlet Nutrient. This is by one of my esteemed colleagues, Pamela Schoenfeld, and she's written a beautiful, comprehensive article on vitamin A and the unfair stigmatization of vitamin A, especially in pregnancy. So, This article is called The Scarlet Nutrient. You can find it at WestonAPrice.org. Click on Journals. Click on The Scarlet Nutrient by Pam Schoenfeld. Let me give you some brief excerpts here. So vitamin A is critical in our nutrition, but even more so in pregnancy. Now, if you look at a prenatal vitamin, you look at the label to see whether it contains vitamin A. And Pam says some brands actually don't contain any vitamin A. It will probably indicate from beta carotene or mixed carotenoids. So when we talk about beta carotene mixed carotenoids, we're talking about the plant sources of the precursor to vitamin A, which is beta carotene. We're thinking sweet potatoes, carrots, dark green leafies, all of these, right? You remember hearing, you know, as a kid, eat your carrots, they're good for your eyes, all of that. And vitamin A can take one of three forms in the human body: retinol, retinal, and retinoic acid, depending on its purpose. Now, normal embryonic development, Pam says, depends upon retinoic acid for the correct expression of the receptors in the differentiating cells. So stem cells being differentiated into other cells such as bone cells, brain cells, heart cells. And for this differentiation to occur, vitamin A supplied by the diet must be available in adequate forms and quantities. So deficiencies in vitamin A can produce a myriad of dangerous outcomes in animals, including defects of the eyes, snout, dental arches, and in the worst case, spontaneous abortion or death of mother and offspring during labor, as described by Weston A. Price. In humans, even mild deficiencies during pregnancy can lead to compromised kidney development in the child. So, the IOM set, the Institute of Medicine set the tolerable upper intake level during pregnancy at 3,000 micrograms a day, which is equivalent to 10,000 IU, international units. And this upper level only applies to the intake of retinol, vitamin A, not to the carotenoids, which are not assigned an upper level because beta carotene supposedly is supposed to self-regulate. However, that's questionable. And although beta carotene is not limited during pregnancy, a high intake can cause carotenemia, which has been associated with amenorrhea, that's loss of menstruation, in young vegetarian women. And recent research, Pam astutely points out, suggests that cleavage products of beta carotene can block vitamin A at its receptor sites. So is this another possible anti-nutrient? And she eloquently describes in this beautiful comprehensive article the different scientific research that discusses the case for revisiting, for reevaluating the level of vitamin A in pregnancy, that it should be revisited and that maybe it should be higher than is what is being recommended by obstetricians. One such study, the Hohenheim Nutrition Conference in Germany in 2009, a Dr. George Leitz reported that a high percentage of women in the UK are at risk for vitamin A deficiency. And one of the chief causes is the fact that two common genetic variations, and one or both, were present in almost half of healthy women studied, greatly lessen the body's ability to convert beta carotene to vitamin A. So this is interesting. A lot of this will depend on the genetics. And if you have the mutation that says you're not a good converter of beta carotene to vitamin A, this poses a problem. And this may be another reason that the amount of vitamin A established in pregnancy does need to be reevaluated. So, if a woman carries both genes that reduce the conversion, she can have a 1/3 to 2/3 reduction in the ratio of active vitamin A to beta carotene circulating in the blood. So, lots of wonderful, wonderful reasons and research and arguments that Pam Schoenfeld, RD, points out in this beautiful article on the Scarlet Nutrient. You can read all about it when you visit WestonAPrice.org, click on Journals, and click on the Scarlet Nutrient. I want to thank you for joining me in another edition of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.